Welcome back to Following Know It on a Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 205, and we are finishing The Bands of Mourning by Brandon Sanderson. Paul, how are you?
Swell, as can be. I'm excited to go through the another Sanderlanch with y'all. One more down, one less to go.
Elliot?
I was just going to reference the Sanderlanch. It's hard to be anything other than good after reading a Sanderlanch that gets your blood moving, gets your interest peaked. Good stuff.
Yeah. We have quite a bit to discuss this episode, so without any ado, let's roll intro, and then we'll let Elliot summarize the last 10 chapters of this book. All right, we're going to save the epilogue for next week, but we have read it for anyone following along. So 22 through 31 of The Bands of Mourning. Go ahead, Elliot.
Yeah, just, 150 pages, an entire Sanderlanch in less than a minute.
Yeah, here you got it.
Okay, so our heroes are in an airship. They just escaped from the larger airship that crashed. We just discovered lots of new stuff about a new people group and technology we didn't know about, but they're off to get to the temple before the Set, and more specifically, Soot gets there. They do get there before them, but just barely. They get into the temple. They have to navigate all the traps and decoys and everything else that's been placed in this temple, supposedly protecting the Bands of Mourning. We get a couple of different little showdown scenes, a few like standoff, guns pointed, allomancy ready types of scenes. The action does kick off. It does get rather bloody, I guess, in several of the scenes. Wax dies. Like, full stop, no questions asked, dies. And Marisi ends up the one with the Bands of Mourning.
Yeah, which, who predicted that?
Wayne stole off the statue thinking it was junk, traded it to Marisi for something random, and lo and behold, Marisi saves the day by pulling out the Bands of Mourning and wielding all the powers of the universe. Okay, maybe not quite that exaggerated, but
of Scadrial.
Yeah, there you go. Ends up handing the bands over to Wax, who decides to come back from the dead to save the day, wields the Bands of Mourning, saves the day, fights all the bad guys. Oh, by the way, Telson is not on the side that we thought she was. She's a bad guy, maybe the bad guy. Escapes. We thought she was dead for a second. Wayne shot her, but then she disappeared. And yeah. Does that get most of it?
Yeah, that gets most of it. There's a little bit of tension with the Malwish to end the end of the book. Whether that'll end peacefully or not, we'll see in the next one. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Oh, Wax has a good long conversation with Harmony while he's dead.
Yes, that is true. To start the episode, have we seen... I'm sure we have. But I can't think of it at the moment, so this is going to be phrased as a question. Have we seen anyone straight up die and then come back to their body full stop, like they're alive? Yumi? Anybody else? Spoilers for Yumi and the Nightmare Painter.
Just a little bit. Hey, We're all spoilers here. We're everything we've read on the podcast is fair game. So
yeah, it's been a while since I reiterated that, though.
Yeah.
Has there been anyone else that's straight up died and gone to the cognitive realm and then been sent back?
I don't think so.
Well,
not sent back like this. If we're talking full Stormlight spoilers, gonna make this preface because this is a really big spoiler if you are listening to this and somehow have not read Stormlight. Teravangian kind of dying in book 4 and then killing Raze.
Sure.
is sort of, but I wouldn't consider that the same. He's not like dying and coming back. Like he becomes Odium, which is totally different.
Right.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think this is the only case of this specifically. I also just have to mention on the topic of the summaries, we won't talk about this yet. I'll wait patiently. But the end of the book, also, we get mention of Trell once again. And I just want to say that that's something I'm very excited to talk about after a little while. And so I'm just throwing that out onto everyone's radar in the meantime.
Yeah. We will certainly talk about Trell before the end of the episode. And certainly next episode with the epilogue as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why I'm asking about Wax like returning from the cognitive realm, does he classify now as a cognitive shadow for like magic mechanic purposes? That's my question. Because the closest thing I could like maybe argue is like a herald. Like heralds have this weird mechanic where their physical body dies, they get banished, and then they return to their body. Or maybe a fused has maybe a similar type of mechanic. But I'm not... And I would classify both those as cognitive shadows. So I'm not sure if Wax would then qualify yet or not. Because I still feel like he's very much Wax, like at the end of the book, and not shadowish.
I think if you're classifying both of the two groups you just mentioned, the heralds and the others, the singers and such, the fused, yeah. If you're considering them cognitive shadows, then I think I would assume the same here. My one point of distinction was wondering if it counts if we haven't necessarily seen any world hopping aspect, but we also haven't seen that with the other aforementioned groups. So I think you could say that. I think you could certainly say that coming back from the cognitive realm in my head seems like a pretty notable thing. I think you could call him a cognitive shadow now.
Trevor, you used an interesting verb a second ago. You said returned, which...
Yeah, I guess I did.
Makes me think of another category of people that die and yet come back over on Nalthus. And I'm now wondering what category the returned are over there with our friends like Lightsong, or sorry, Shallan, over on that world.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question more directly, I don't know if I think this is a cognitive shadow. I feel like this is a little different. I feel like cognitive shadow is body is dead and gone. No question. You're just soul. You've been able to like recreate your body in a sense so you don't creep other people out. Or something like that. It's physical body is dead. Whereas this feels like spirit, mind, soul, whatever you want to call it, separates from body, heads towards death, but then stops and goes back.
Right.
Whereas but, like, think Kelsier.
Hmm.
He didn't go back. He just paused.
Right.
And like someone like Zyle, I feel like explained this a little bit to us. And the conclusion, at least I came to, was kind of similar. He's not a body and therefore different than what Wax is, perhaps.
Right. Since you brought up Zyle, he has this whole monologue with Kaladin in Rhythm of War that you're talking about, where he classifies all cognitive beings as either type 1 or type 2 invested entities is what he calls them. And so a type 1 would be like pure investiture, which he says is like Syl. Syl is a type 1 invested entity. And then he classifies himself as a type 2, which is like mostly investiture, but also pretty pretty in the physical realm as well. I would agree with you. I think Wax is fairly certainly his full self now, along with the previous Yumi spoiler I talked about. I think both of those have been fully pulled back into the physical realm, like their physical body, and reinvested their physical body. So I think for magic mechanic purposes, it's safe to assume that Wax is not a cognitive shadow and he's himself once again, but I'd be willing to entertain the idea that he is. That's not definitive by any means. All right. Let's talk about the Bands of Mourning, the title of the book. We arrive at this spooky temple to the Sovereign, and this entire time, Alec, our stand-in Malwish guy, they've made the assumption that it's the Lord Ruler. By the end of the book, it is confirmed to us that it is actually Kelsier, who, after Vin does all her stuff, after Miss Mornera 1, he makes his way to the southern continent and saves the Malwish. And he becomes their sovereign. So this temple's actually to Kelsier. He's got a spike through one eye, which still hasn't really been answered to us, but that's how we've seen him since the Secret History. So we see Secret History and he doesn't have a spike. And then sometime between then and now, he does get one spike through one eye. So we get to the temple for Kelsier. It's sprung with like way too many booby traps for any adventurer that might want to try to make its way through the doors. There's some secret language on the doors to the like the throne room that Edworn somehow knows, but nobody else. That like, it's not a Malwish language. It's not, because Alec doesn't recognize it. It's not anybody from the basin that they know of. So Edworn somehow knows this language and can figure out the clue. Opens the door. Bands aren't there. Fall down a pit. Bands aren't there, even though they look like they're there. Turns out, oh, they were on the doorknob. So Wayne, you know, picks up this old the spearhead of the statue of Kelsier at the front door, gives it to Maracy, like you said, Elliot. Maracy then burns it while holding it, I guess. Like, are they metals, or are they copper mines, or are they both, or what is going on? Because assuming I understand the mechanics, just because you're Mistborn and a ferrochemist doesn't mean you can hold your metals in your metal mind, right? You still have to swallow said metals. Oh, but they do. They hold.
She down a bunch of metals.
She does. You're right. I forgot about that. She does hold, like, as she's holding the spearhead, she then downs some metals. Yeah. Okay. You're right. So the Bands of Mourning are the spearhead at the front door. What do you guys think of that twist?
So the whole thing, I'm quoting what you put in the outline. The whole thing is very Indiana Jones-esque. This whole temple, all the booby traps, everything. You know, even their little hats, I'm sure, are very Indiana Jones-esque to a bit, at least.
Yep.
And it very much felt like that. It felt like we were seeking this lost treasure, which is what we were doing. But the lost treasure is not infinite riches, it's infinite power. And it was weird. It was almost difficult. Maybe this was just the audiobook thing. It was kind of a little bit difficult to keep track of what was and what was not the Bands of Mourning.
But yeah,
it kind of jumps around and shows a lot of things of, is it in here? Oh, they've got to be down there, you know, just past this other thing or whatever. And then Wayne kind of just picks it up and they're like, okay, well, we did it. You know, we got it now. But yeah, I thought it was neat. It was slightly hard to keep track of what was and what was not. But I did think it was very interesting that Marcy was the one to get the Bands of Mourning. It was really neat seeing a little more from her perspective, like harnessing that power and everything there, especially because I feel like Marcy's character has... Marcy and Steris a bit kind of struggled with, I guess, feeling useful, feeling like they have the power to really like help Wax as the main protagonist. To an extent, and it was kind of neat to just give Marcy this like full unadulterated, you have the power to do everything, you know, all at once, and just have her go in and work to save Wax and everybody. I thought it was neat. I liked it.
And we get a point of view from her mind as she's holding the Bands of Mourning. She acknowledges to herself she's always been jealous of, you know, more powerful allomancers. But from the growth that we've seen her go through the last couple books, she is okay with surrendering the bands to someone else. That's not who she wants to be, is this super powerful allomancer. She wants to be a successful constable. She wants to, you know, change the world through law and order and good, as opposed to like power and tyranny, for lack of a better word.
Power and force kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And so as she's holding the Bands of Mourning, she almost says an ideal of, yeah, I'm fine without this, and then goes and gives it to Wax, and Wax uses it. So
I think it's neat. Isn't it also in this scene when we see her, is there a statue of the Ascendant Warrior of Ven here? Or wait, was Ven the Ascendant Warrior? I think so.
Ven is the Ascendant Warrior, but there's no statue of her. There's a statue of her in New Saren. Are you thinking of that?
Maybe so. Either way, isn't Marcy like thinking like this is what the Ascendant Warrior must have felt, right? This is what it was. I guess I got it mixed up. There's no statue involved, but in my head, she's looking up at the statue or notices, or is at least thinking of the Ascendant Warrior and kind of thinks back to what it may have been like. And it's really neat to have that as the reader who has read all of Ven's story. It kind of reflects a little bit of her story in that, and you know, what might she have gone through and all these things. It's a really neat sensation that I don't think I have had before, of like a looking back at this historical figure that we followed for many pages. You know, I thought that was just really neat how that was able to work into the equation here.
It makes me think again about reading order and what it would be like to read Mistborn Era 2 and then go read Mistborn Era 1. Like those kinds of elements where you'd read this about, oh, the Ascendant Warrior, the Ascendant Warrior, and then go back to Mistborn Era 1 with those like references and read the story of how Ven becomes Ascendant. That would be kind of cool. Almost like reading the Lord of the Rings and getting like these obscure references to like Beren and Luthien. And then you go pick up the Silmarillion and you're like, oh, here's the story of Beren and Luthien. Like that's one of the things I find really fun about the Silmarillion.
I think it, for reading order purposes, I wonder if you could figure out like a censored version of Era 2 where it doesn't like explicitly spoil how Era 1 ends.
Does Era 2 tell you that Harmony is Sazed?
Yes.
Are you sure?
I don't think, yes. I don't think it, I don't remember it doing so, but I probably also, well, if that's the case, I probably glossed over it and didn't think much about it, you know?
I know for a fact it does. I don't remember if we've gotten there yet or not, because at one point Kelsier refers to Harmony as Zazed, but I know we haven't gotten there yet. There's another point where Wax refers to Harmony as Zazed.
Mm.
I think that's like the first part of the next book. where Wax is like thinking about Harmony as Zazet now instead of Harmony. But it does spoil it, but I don't think not yet.
I think knowing if I had someone start Era 1 right now and they hadn't read anything else in the Cosmere, and maybe they've read other stuff in the Cosmere, but anyways, they're reading Era 1 for the first time, and I just tell them Sazed becomes the Hero of Ages. He holds two, the power of ruin and preservation by the end of the series. I feel like even if you knew that massive spoiler, you would read it and just be like, when does this happen? How is this good? How are we going to get there? I feel like it's still a big plot twist, even if you know it's going to happen. So I think that's funny. I feel like that wouldn't even be, I feel like that wouldn't actually ruin the story for me,
That feeds into a bigger discussion about spoilers in general. Like, if you've been spoiled on a major plot point, does that ruin a book for you? Because there's some people that it absolutely does. If they know that Sazed is the Hero of Ages at the end of the book, they're not going to read the book. They don't care. But I think I strayed more towards your direction, Paul, of reading how we got there is more important than Sazed is the Hero of Ages. But that there's a grand debate with that one.
And then there's other people. I seriously was in a book club once with someone who, the way they read every book was to read the last chapter first and then go start the rest of the book. They read every book that way. Seriously. What? I thought they were joking. They were serious.
Because they can't stand suspense or what?
I think they talked about they liked that more like detective mystery way of reading the book. They wanted to know the end without knowing how you got there so that they could spend the whole book trying to guess how you were going to get to the end that they already knew.
Interesting.
I'm gonna call my wife out on this one. My wife, reading Mistborn Era 1, after reading the first book, I kind of, she was asking me questions about it, and I was like, yeah, no, everything ends up fine. And then, spoiler for the end of book one, Kelsier dies, and she was like, no, absolutely not. You have to tell me.
You betrayed me. Happen.
Yes, because she got too emotionally attached and then was devastated by Kelsier's, death. And so then, in order for it to... true story, like I said, I'm throwing her under the bus. In order for her to finish Mistborn Era 1, I had to tell her who dies and who does not die. And ultimately, the ending result, which was a little bit complicated, I was like, well... some of them don't.
It depends.
Die, yeah, but they die. And so I kind of had to give away all the endings just about, and because she couldn't sit in the suspense or get too attached to certain characters if she knew they were going to die. And so there's certainly people out there. My wife is one of those okay. people.
All right, but then how did she then read Mistborn Era 2? Because you haven't finished it, and now she knows, and you don't.
To my knowledge, she did just read it. I don't think she looked it up. She didn't like look up anything in advance. But if it were, going back and she was doing this and I hadn't read it, I wouldn't put it past her, because sometimes when we watch TV shows, she'll look up the endings once we start it, because she needs to know the end result. So,
but.
For me, I'm very much on the side of I need to not know what's happening.
And specifically with deaths, I feel like I'm that way, where I don't want to know if I should get attached to this character or not. Because if I know this character is going to die, I'm going to deliberately reserve myself from that character so I don't, get hurt. But that's part of the story. I want to experience that. Like, okay, Stormlight spoilers. If I knew going in that Teft was going to die at the end of, the Rhythm of War, I wouldn't get as attached to Teft as I did by the end of Rhythm of War. So,
that's why I never got that attached to Teft. I just had a hunch,
You actually did predict it at the beginning of Rhythm of War that Teft was going to die. I don't know how you got that one, but you did.
I don't remember predicting it, but I did. Yeah.
Trevor, you're going to have to go back and add a spoiler warning at the beginning of this episode because we're just dropping all the spoilers.
Yeah, that's true. Let's talk about all the Cosmere deaths and whether they're actually deaths or the mechanics of how they died. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, we'll have to add a preface. But yeah, so Marcy gets the Bands of Mourning and then Wax comes back and gets the Bands of Mourning from her, right? That's kind of how it goes.
And who ends up with the Bands of Mourning at the end of the book?
Milan,
yeah. Yes,
which that was something I did not see coming, but I think was a, you know, logically it's a very smart choice, I guess.
I think Milan needs a holiday after this book.
she kind of got ripped apart.
She had a rough time in the last quarter of this book.
That's true. Do you guys think, I mean, we're not quite to prediction mode yet, but I'm going to ask you a question anyway. Do you guys think the Bands of Mourning, the actual item, is going to be like a plot mechanic in the next book, or is it just going to be in a vault somewhere for your next book and we're not going to touch it?
See, there's the answer I want to give you to this question. And then there's the answer that the rational side of me knows I should give you because I've been scarred. When you introduce a small item of clearly very important significance in the beginning of a book, you would think it would come back.
I thought you were going the Dawn Shard route, but no, you're going the Dark Sphere route. One.
I'm going the Dark Sphere route.
Okay.
And then take said item of clear significance and importance and proceed to ignore it for 3 entire books, 3 giant epic length books.
Yeah.
Are the Bands of Mourning going to be important? Are we going to see them again? No. They're just going to disappear and they're never going to talk about them again.
So my natural instinct says, of course we're going to see the Bands of Mourning again because we can use them to our advantage. You know, I'm Boromir, I guess. Yeah, I think more likely we're not going to see. I'm sure it will be mentioned in book 4. They'll be like, wow, if only I had the Bands of Mourning right now or something, if I had that power, you know, something like that. But obviously, this is all going to be around the lost metal, and that's going to be the big breakthrough at the end, you know. One other thing I wanted to mention was the mists seemed to come back briefly, which I thought was neat. I think that's when he was talking about the Marcy may have been talking about the Ascendant Warrior because there were suddenly like mists around her while she was using the power, which I thought was interesting because
she was actually producing the mist. It wasn't that like Harmony was. She was producing the mist.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought that was kind of neat. We haven't seen anything about mist that was very much for the Era 1 readers. Because there really hasn't been much about that at all in this series.
I can never keep this straight. Allomancy is preservation's power.
Correct.
Hemalurgy is ruin's power.
Correct.
And ferrochemy is like
the balance.
Trell's
power. Yeah. Not where I was going with this, but maybe. Where I was going with this is we know the mists are a very preservation thing. It always seems to permeate the imagery around preservation. So I'm curious exactly what's happening here. Because we know that Sazed is preservation.
Right.
But when Marcy takes on the Bands of Mourning, which is Allomancy and Ferrochemy, the mists arrive, or she creates mist. Is that like the preservation side reveling in the power with the absence of ruin? Like, yes, haha, I get to be preservation for a while through the power of the Bands of Mourning, perhaps.
Maybe. Up until now in Era 2, the mists arrive like, I want to say like twice a month, but they're not like consistent. So Wax is always wishing for the mist when he's, you know, going out into the city for the night or, you know, out in the roughs or whatever. The mists arrive very infrequently, but they are on a relative consistent basis of, like, they're not super rare. It's more like a, you know, a misty night on Earth, but they're far more consistent and uniform than that would be. So is it just whenever Sazed feels like it? I don't know. is Sazed doing something specific to make them show up? I don't know.
Okay, so I have a question for, I mean, I guess technically for Elliot, since Trevor has read this already. So how do you feel, I guess this could definitely go to both of y'all. How do you feel about the villain situation going into book four? So we had Soot, right? We had Edwin Ladrian. We had Soot, who dies at the end of this book,
yep,
but not at the hand of our heroes,
right? Correct.
Which was really neat. I really liked that, and that really, for me, sets up how, I guess, kind of ruthless, or I guess above our Trell villain is potentially whoever's behind this, because this whole time it has kind of been setting up Soot to be like the villain, and then Telson betrays, you know, our heroes, and it's like, okay, another kind of villain, bad guy betraying. But Soot at the end is just kind of deleted. Just, he's gone. We don't need him anymore. He's unimportant to the work, I guess, that Trell has at hand, which, right, I think sets up really in a great way. It got me very engaged, very invested, and curious to see what the villain will look like in book four. Do y'all think do y'all think Telson is going to be like the villain, or is that going to be like the early goose chase, which will then maybe cascade into like the bigger Cosmere level impact type thing? Or, you know, is Telson the big villain, or the little another little villain, I guess, and we'll see something more sinister?
And then, kind of building on this for Elliot, is Trell an issue that we can solve in one book? Or are we going to continue to tease Trell into another era? And is Telson going to be like the big bad for book four?
I think Telson is not the big bad. I think it's what you were saying, Paul. We're going to spend part of the next book, maybe even all of the next book, chasing Telson. And then we're going to learn she's not the biggest, baddest, even within the set. I don't think she's going to be the mastermind behind all the stuff we're seeing in these books. I think there's going to be someone else. Trell, I actually have some predictions about Trell. I don't know if you want them now or if you want them in our wrap-up episode.
Yeah, let's save them for next week. We'll tease that. All right, let's talk about the Malwish real quick, and then we'll get into Wax and Harmony. So we have Alec, who was introduced last episode. The set seemed to have captured and tortured his crewmates with their airplane, figured out some of their secrets, and that's how they got to the temple. Alec is reunited with his crew, or what's left of his crew. They get given their ship back to sail back to their, or fly back to their continent. What do you guys think of the Malwish as an introduction? Like, there's this other people group that have been on the southern continent. We haven't heard a thing about them until last week, and now they seem to be like a pretty major mechanic, and they've been spying on the basin for, like, I don't know, 10 years or something like that.
If they're going to be relevant next book, then I think it's a good lead in. We got a little bit of them. We want to learn a lot more. It's a good get us interested? Are they friends? Are they not? Like, we're kind of on the bubble. If they're not going to feature in the next book, I'll be a little upset, because then this will be a like, well, what was the point of that kind of thing? So I'm hoping there'll be a major feature in the next book.
Or at least, I'm thinking that they will be back as well. Sorry, I don't know if you finished your thought, Elliot.
The rest of my thought came to me like 3 seconds too late. So you're fine. I was just thinking, I hope that they are present in the next book and that like their presence matters. We need to see our society grapple with this and progress the like geopolitical plot line of where are we as a people group. I think the Mawish can drive that discussion, and I hope they do. But yeah, you had another thought, Paul.
I was mostly just, I agree with what you're saying. Pretty spot on. I'm mostly curious to see, yeah, just what kind of relationship is held up, I guess, because the kind of the leader, right, seems to not necessarily care for our characters. And so I don't know. I'm assuming that will ultimately turn into the catalyst of technology advancing and leading us into an Era 3 timeline in the future, is my assumption as what their role is going to be. So I could see them being on the back burner for a while, just kind of being mentioned a bit and then being more so involved in Era 3. But I can also see him being around for our next book, TBD.
At least one of them has to be around, because apparently at the end of the book, Alec and Marcy are a thing.
Yes,
Alec that is true. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Openly flirting with Marcy by the end of the book. Yeah. Yes.
It almost like it was starting to give me weird vibes. Like he gives her his mask, or is it a new mask? I forget which one
it's,
it was.
It's his mask, and he puts on a new one.
Okay, I almost got the impression of like weird tribal marriage ritual. Like
he just proposed
and she accepted, and he's not going to tell her that that's exactly what just happened. And later he's going to spring that on her, like, well, by the way, you know, we're actually married according to my customs because you accepted my mask. You know,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So. Originally, when I read this, I wasn't like super on board with this whole idea of like another people group on the other side of the planet that we've never heard of in either Mistborn Era 1 or Era 2. And then I began to like entertain the idea of, okay, the age of like exploration, what if that never happens? Which is what Sanderson has set up. Like, you're in the basin, you have everything, like God has provided everything that you need. The Skadrians don't want to move. And in the last book, Sazed was like, yeah, I accidentally created some issues because you guys have everything you need and you're not innovating at all. So that's a problem. And then, so then what if the Age of Exploration and the Age of Invention happened at the same time? So that's a pretty cool idea that is going to be entertained here. So I am on board with that after I thought about that. Then also consider the Malwish and how Kelsier has set them up. So if you remember in Secret History, let's say Kelsier goes down to the southern continent, and with the knowledge that Kelsier has, what can he provide them with? Out of the three magic systems, he has two of them, right? So you have to be... You have to have Allomancy from birth, right? You have to have Ferrochemy from birth, but there's an asterisk there. And then you can do Hemallergy whenever you want, as long as you have a primary thing. So, Kelsier presumably figures out the unkeyed intent or unkeyed metal mind thing, goes and teaches that to the Malwish. So now the Malwish are using like these medallions with unkeyed ferrochemy. And that's their main magic system, is they're using Ferrochemie that isn't tapped to anyone. They don't really know. I don't really think they know the full mechanics of that. In fact, I think they say that in Arcanum Unbounded, or in the Ars Arcanum, I should say, at the end of this book, that they don't really understand what they're doing by unkeying this investiture. But so you have the basin, who's mainly set up around Allomancy, and Ferrochemie is still pretty niche because the terrorists have kept their little village in this middle that they don't really marry outside of the terrorist lines. And then you have the Malwish, who are like fully in on Ferrochemie that's unkeyed, that anyone can use it. And then maybe Hemallergy, because Kelsier knows about Hemallergy before he goes down there. So I think there's going to be an interesting dynamic of combining the two versions of Ferrochemie they have, and then one has Allomancy and one maybe has Hemallergy, because Hemallergy has been actively suppressed in the basin, right? Like, only really the Set have been using Hemallergy up till now. So,
and Marsh.
Oh, yes, Marsh. Death. The Grim Reaper. Where is he, by the way? What?
Where is he?
What's he doing?
Hey, here's a book. See ya.
Yeah. In the first book. All right. I want to talk about Wax and Harmony, because I've talked about it on the podcast before, this entire dynamic of Wax really struggling with Sazed, like specifically, and Sazed making his decisions on who to help and when to help and all those types of things. I think that dynamic is fascinating. And I love that Sanderson tackles it in these books. So I want to read pretty much the majority of their conversation. Starts on 378 on my book. I'm just going to go ahead and read it, and then we can talk about it for a second. "Should I prevent all hardship, Waxillium?" "I know where this is going," Wax said. "I know what you're going to say. You value choice. Everyone theorizes about it. But you can help. You've done it before, in placing me where I needed to go. You intervene, so why not more? Prevent children from being killed. Make certain the constables arrive in time to stop deaths. You don't have to take away choice, but you could do more. I know you could." "What is it to be God, Waxillium?" Harmony asked. "I don't think that's a question I can answer." "It is not one I ever thought I'd have to answer either," Harmony said. "But obviously it has been forced upon me. You would have me intervene, stop the murders of innocents. I could do this. I have considered it. If I were to stop everyone, what then? Do I stop maimings as well?" "Of course," Wax said. "And where do I hold back, Wax? Do I prevent all wounds? Or do I prevent only the ones caused by evil people? Do I stop a man from falling asleep so that he will not tip a candle and burn down his house? Do I stop all harm that could ever befall a person? Maybe. And once nobody is hurt," Harmony said, "will people be satisfied? Will they not pray to me and ask for more? Will some people still curse and spit at the sound of my name because they are poor while another is rich? Should I mitigate this? Make everyone the same, Waxillium?" "I won't be caught in this trap," Wax said. "You're God, not me. You can find the line where you prevent the worst. You can find a line where you're stopping the worst that is reasonable, while still letting us live our lives." "Perhaps," Harmony said softly. "I have already done just as you suggest. You do not see it, because the worst never reaches you." And right at the end of that whole section, they're looking at this invasive red mist that is choking Scadrial. So, I don't know. I just really like the dynamic of Sazed, who we've grown to love over the Era 1, and now he's so torn on when to act and when not to. He draws a line that Wax doesn't agree with, because, you know, in Wax's head, he's like, you have the power therefore you have the responsibility to act. And he just doesn't understand how you could not. So then they just go back and forth, and I really like that dynamic.
This is a really good example of Sanderson leaning into the tough questions. We've talked about this on the podcast before. One of the things I love about Brandon is he does not shy away from the tough, awkward, real life questions. And obviously we're still in a fictional world, and we're still spinning like some fictional scenarios that Wax and Sazed are talking through, but it still really makes you, it really makes you think. It really makes you think about the real world and ethical choices that we have to make, or, you know, those kinds of things. So I love this discussion.
Paul, do you think Sazed should do more?
You know, maybe I'm biased because I just like Sazed a lot, but I think he's doing a good job. I'm in the boat of trusting Sazed in his position, and that he has more knowledge than our characters do of all the situations around the world. So I definitely trust him. It does also make me think back, though, from Wax's perspective, thinking back to the prologue of this book, right? We see young Wax, and the synopsis of it is he is kind of encouraged or forced to live under rules that he does not think are completely right. He does not think it's the right thing to not pursue or punish the criminal, if you will. And so we kind of get that perspective of Wax.
I'm trying to remember his name. What's that throughout other the book, kid's yeah. name?
I don't remember.
I'll think of it here in a second. Keep going.
Maybe it was Trell or something. it was not. But, but we kind of get this sense with Wax of kind of finding, I guess, the morality in his law work and stuff. And I feel like this isn't exactly comparable, but it felt like another moment akin to that of Wax being shown by Harmony, like, this is what I do, why I do it kind of thing, briefly. And Wax being like, okay, I disagree. And then going forward, I guess.
Right.
Which was pretty neat. So
I think it's an interest. It's Forge, by the way. Definitely didn't look that up, but it's his name is Forge. I think it's interesting. You can completely understand what Wax is saying, that like, if you have the ability to save someone, why would you not? And then you can definitely understand the point that Sazed makes of, okay, but depending on where I draw the line, there will always be good and right people that disagree with me. So I agree. I understand that you disagree with the line I drew. But who's, like, I'm the one deciding where to draw the line, and that's always going to anger someone. So Sazed views himself as the protector of Scadrial and is drawing the line of, I'm going to protect you from Trell. Right? So that's the line he draws. And everything else that happens, like, within Scadrial, he's trying to be pretty hands off. You know, he'll move Wax where he needs to go, or move other people, and, you know, stuff like that. But it's just very interesting that someone will always disagree with the line I draw.
And I think Harmony goes on to make a really emotionally powerful point just a few lines down from where you stopped reading earlier, Trevor, because he talks about the moment that Wax killed Lessie, and he gets Wax to understand, would you really have had it any other way? And that's really hard to wrestle with at first. But I think what he's spelling out there is, because there's evil in the world, terrible things are going to happen. And you feel so torn up about the fact that I forced you to kill Lessie, but would you really have rather someone else did it? Would you have had her go out a different, more painful way, you know, something along those lines. If someone had to take her out because she was committing all this evil or serving evil, wouldn't you have rather have been you? And Wax kind of gets to the point where he's like, yeah, I would have.
Yeah. And he lets, you know, Wax be there for her death and be able to say goodbye to her without the impact of Trell on her. So, you know, there's a stairs. Sazed still does have a heart for these things. So anything else for this this episode, gentlemen? Paul, right at the bottom of this outline, you said Ars Arcanum dot dot dot. That's all you have. What did you find?
Yes. Okay. So this may be old news that I'm just realizing, but and I don't know if this is something we need to talk about in the next episode. I think it's fine to talk about now. It's more of an aside, not related to our story. So in the I think that's what it's called, right? The Ars Arcanum at the end that shows like the different metals and what they do and stuff like that, right?
Yep.
So in this, it talks about every elemantic metal or all the metals and what it does for elemancy and what it does for ferrochemy, right? And there were definitely several I don't remember seeing. Like I said, this may have been old news. Maybe we've already talked about this and it totally glossed over my head. But we get some that were very interesting to me. And I'm blanking on what the actual metals were themselves, but the ferrochemical ability was to, for one of them was to store up fortune.
Chromium.
One of them was to store up connection.
Durelement.
We'll see connection. Yes. And then one was to store up just, I think it was just investiture.
Nigrosil.
Yep. Yes. Yes. And those that just really got me thinking of like, okay, so connection, the only time that we've really seen a lot of connection is with our bondsmiths in Stormlight. Yep. Right? That's the most we see connection. And I'm like, so if you can actively just, it is also kind of funny hearing the descriptors of how it's stored up with connection. It's basically like you don't get along with your friends for a period of time. And then you're really good at making friends and connecting with people and stuff like that.
Right.
This
you got to save it for the job interview, right? Exactly. And then you're burning connection. Yes. Right, exactly.
Yes. Which was very comical to me. And same with fortune. It was like, basically you have really bad luck for a long time for while you're storing it up, and then you can have good luck while you're using it, you know. But I just wanted to bring this up because maybe y'all already knew this. I'm imagining y'all already did, but to me this seemed like a big deal. Like, do we have people? I'm sure we've had people elsewhere who I feel like knowing you can store up fortune just seems like there's a lot of possibilities unlocked in my brain. And we've talked about that, and fortune and intent are kind of some of the like hot words we've been throwing around lately of how is that actually going to be implemented? We know Hoid has a lot of fortune. We have no random stuff like that, but not super tangible. What's it doing? Answers. And so I just wanted to bring that up of like it's, you could just the fact you can store it all up, store up connection, store up, you know, what if Dalinar was hypothetically given a metal mind with just a ton of connection in it or something? Right. Is that really just kind of dumbed down to the like social level of, but I don't think so. It's almost in my head, almost akin to soothing. Like if Dalinar were to tap connection, would he be able to lead like 10 times more effectively because everyone would really like be on the same wavelength as him? I don't know. There's just a lot in my brain that is kind of theory crafting or wandering because the fact you can store up all these things with particular hemolytic powers. And so I definitely had to bring that up to at least just voice I'm a tad confused and not sure how, when, or why this is relevant.
Sure. And I'll just kind of echo what you're saying there. I'm one to theorize on a magic system just as anyone else. When I read or hear this in the audiobook, I'm like, okay, I don't understand what that means, but I understand that that has crazy implications. So, right. So the one that really caught my eye was cadmium, which is storing breaths.
Yes.
And I was thinking to myself, okay, hold on. We already have stuff that stores breaths. Like if you can store breaths in like clothes, like, you know, you can drain the color and pull out the breaths from something. So if you had a metal that gave you free breaths, or you could then, like, I don't understand what that the implication there is.
Well, haven't we seen this already? Like, isn't this how what Todium steals from Hoid is, like, isn't it almost from, in my head, it's from a metal mind, stealing his breath stored. Stealing knowledge or memories or something stored. I guess that could be the memory one. But I guess in my head, the breaths were equated with like the memory and stuff being stolen. So
you are correct. Hoid has memories stored in his scarf, and his scarf is gray.
Yeah.
At the end of the chapter.
Okay. Another thing I want to say with this, Trevor, I heard that it stores breaths, and that confused me. I'm like, isn't that it's a little rocky in my mind of if that's different from storing investiture or what, you know,
right.
Like, there's a lot, but it specifically, it describes how it's used, and that it's like quite literally like you don't have to breathe for a while. Like you could go underwater and swim for a long time.
Is it like air? Is that what we're talking about?
It describes that of like, it describes it as like an actual oxygen respiration thing.
Oh.
Like you don't have to breathe for X amount of time or something like that. So I don't know, that may not be what you were thinking.
Okay.
At least whenever I heard the descriptions, that's what I remembered, because I heard stores breaths and my ears perked up. You know, and then it seemed more commonplace. So
sure, but the other ones you were talking about certainly do have more impact. Yeah. But if we're just talking about air, then never mind. Ellie, did you want to chime in on something?
I was gonna point you to that description of breath as well. But yeah, I think we know too much. We're reading into something maybe a little too deeply when it's just like,
yeah.
Oxygen in your blood. But still, the specifically for me, the one that says stores investiture, that one puzzles me, because it's like, well, hang on a second, isn't this all investiture?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Why do we have a specific one to store power? Isn't that what all these metals are? Is some form of investiture that's being tapped in some way?
We do get the answer to that in this, don't we? They explicitly say that the metal itself isn't necessarily powerful, right? But it's basically, I don't know, in my head, it's like gasoline. Like, it's gasoline itself isn't really going to do anything or do anything special, but put into an engine, like the engine uses it to move stuff, to then do things.
I think
it makes a specific point to mention, like, metal is not like solid investiture,
right? But the power in it is. So what it says for Nycrosil is the soul bearer pharynx can store investiture in a Nycrosil metal mind. This is a power that very few know anything about. Indeed, I'm certain the people of Terris don't truly know what they are doing when they use these powers. And that's all it says. Thanks, so I think Chris. I think even Chris is confused about this. Like, I don't understand what this means, but I'm fairly certain it's important, which is what Chris is saying.
Well, and back to your like just impression of these Ars Arcanum type things here, Trevor, you read this kind of stuff and it's like, oh, wow, that's cool. We can start theorizing and all this crazy stuff. But my takeaway from it just in general is the possibilities when you start to talk about like combining all these powers feels infinite.
Yeah.
It's like there's no way Brandon has even thought of all the ways that you could do stuff. As soon as you have something like the Bands of Mourning into the equation, it says in the chapter, Marcy taps the power and has access to every Allomancy and every Ferrochemy power at once. Like the possibilities with that, when you run down this list of what all she now can do and the way they might interact with each other, it's just like, we're talking about like N to the nth power. Like this is getting crazy. Like just crazy, crazy.
Yeah. And I think it was back in maybe book two where there's like a specific name for each combo of one ferrochemist and one like misting. And that turns into what, 16 times 16, which is like two something. 244. No, that's not right. 216. Anyway. And then there's an offhand comment where it's like, yeah, Wax claims to have memorized all the names for all the combos. Wayne claims to have memorized all the names for all the combos. And that made me stop and think. I'm like, okay, not even Sanderson has even thought of half of these.
Yeah.
But he's just writing in there that like some people study this. I'm certainly not one of them, but some people study these. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. The implications of what the Ghost Bloods are doing is an interesting idea, because the Ghost Bloods in Stormlight have the motivation of getting Stormlight off of Roshar. Right, that's their main goal, is getting Stormlight off of Roshar. But if you have a metal that stores investiture, why are you bothering? What is so special about Stormlight that the Ghost Bloods are willing to travel to Roshar to get in the middle of Odium versus Honor's clash? Like, I have a lot more questions about the magic on Scadrial and how it combos with other magic systems than I have answers at this point. So,
and it seems like Brandon has at least, it's not like he's just making it up as he goes. He knows at least some of it, because he's teased things like Chris herself or this Nexus planet or wherever that's going to be, where all this research is happening, or these scholars out there studying this kind of stuff. Like, clear, it seems like it's going somewhere. Like he thought through those crazy questions. But yeah, I'm with you. Why? One, the possibilities are ridiculously endless, and two, what do the Ghost Bloods know that we don't? Clearly a bunch.
Right. Anything else, gentlemen?
Nothing else from me. I appreciate y'all indulging me on the metal mines there at the end.
If you haven't keyed into it at this point, that chart is where everybody gets their questions for Brandon at Dragonsteel. Yeah. They comb through that chart and they pull through all the surges of the Knights Radiant and stuff like that. And they're like, okay, so if we had a Dustbringer who was a ferrochemist and then had a hemallergic spike, what does that do? And people try specifically to stump Brandon on his own things. And, you know, sometimes he just has to pull out Raffo just to avoid the question.
Absolutely.
Real quick before we end here, we can't close this without acknowledging that at the end of all this, Wax and Steris are married.
Oh yeah. I actually love that scene. It's so wholesome between the two of them. It's so good.
It is. The scene itself is. And Wax and Steris, I actually really enjoyed Steris' characters throughout this book. It was a highlight. And to end it on that was pretty cool. But I read through that scene and basically was like, wait a second. Another off-page wedding? they don't even like they it just kind of scene cuts as they're walking towards the priest guy who's standing there and he's going to marry him. And my takeaway from that was
at like 3 a.m.
Yeah. My takeaway from that was, okay, we've read a lot of books now. And how many marriages have we actually seen happen on screen? None?
One.
Yeah, we went to a wedding, but...
And then a water tower got dropped on it, and it didn't actually happen. No.
We had an actual wedding. Beginning of Oathbringer, Dalinar and Navani get married.
Oh,
and
yeah?
And the Stormfather marries them. But that's a pretty rushed event, and I don't know if that really counts, but technically there's a marriage that happens.
And I'm thinking of like Shallan and Adolin get married completely off screen, and you like don't even hear anything about it. I was like, does Brandon have something against wedding scenes? Because the only like full up one we've gotten got a water tower dropped on it.
I mean, it's really interesting that you say that actually, because Elantris closes with "and let's go get married," and then this book closes with "let's go get married."
Ellen get married in like a secret ceremony as well that no one was actually at?
Oh no, not that one. Does happen on screen because it's super short and says it's there and says all you have to do is say this and then they're married.
Yeah, but it is like nobody's there. It's not like a wedding, you know.
Right.
They get married officially, but it's not like a wedding, you know?
Yeah. Okay, that's true.
Yeah.
I want, before the Cosmere ends, a full-up pomp and circumstance wedding scene.
Wedding?
That is my request, Brandon.
I have hope that we will get that with Shallan and Adolin, if neither die.
They're already married.
They're married?
Yeah.
They get married at the end of Oathbringer.
It's completely off-screen. We just like cut to the next scene and they go, "Oh yeah, that wedding was amazing, wasn't it?" And they're chatting and it's like, "What? We didn't get to see apologies. That?"
Yeah, no, I guess we're not getting one. Oh well. Maybe we'll get one with Marisee and Alec.
What if Elantris 2 opens with Serene and what's his toast? Raiden. Would you be happy with that?
That'd be great. Yeah, I like that. That'd be very fitting for Elantris as well. That's kind of like the happy ending. The happier stories.
Make it happen, Brandon.
All right. We can conclude there. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot. We will be doing Bands of Mourning wrap up and talking a little bit about the epilogue. There's some interesting things that happen next week.
On we go.
Toodles.